Good evening. We'll start this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee dated March 21st, 2011. The first order of business, would you please review and approve the minutes for the March 7th, 2011 meeting? Yep. Okay, so Joanne and Bob are both in agreement. The first order of business this evening then will be the continuing discussion that we had at our last meeting regarding the food service financial projections and the intergovernmental agreement that we're proposing entering with Marquette District 15 and providing food services to School District 41 here in Glen Ellyn. You have white copies of the latest and the final edition of the intergovernmental agreement. This will be for the year 2000, beginning 2011, July of 2011, and then agreement. Then the next agreement, beginning the first day of July 2012. I would present that information to you for this evening, so you have take a look. Not necessarily now, but at your convenience. We believe that these agreements are everything that the board and the board of both districts, as well as the administration of both districts, are attempting to accomplish at this time. If you have any comments later, I'll be more than happy to take a call or an email, whatever method you prefer. At our last meeting, we discussed providing you with some financial projections in terms of what food service currently costs District 41 annually to run, as well as what we would anticipate the cost would be as we move forward. What we've provided you here is a little history. We've provided you in the first column there is a 2009-10 budget and what the actual expenditures came in at fiscal year 9-10, which was actually last fiscal year. As you can see, the district, the net program cost to the district was approximately $109,500. This year, the administration has projected the deficit of that program to be approximately $86,235,000, and year to date we're running $72,460 as a deficit. The final column would be the projected 2011 and 12 school year. Obviously that would begin July 1st and end the following June 30th. We're projecting total revenues. All the revenues recognized in that column would be approximately $67,000. Which would be garnered through the state and federal revenue sources. And then the expenses incurred would be the D-15 and 41 program expenses of approximately $124,000. The expenses associated with the elementary milk program of about $20,000. Total program cost of about $144,000 for a deficit of approximately $77,000 to support that program for the next fiscal year. 2011-2012.
Annual numbers? Pardon me?
These would be annual numbers, yes.
So the Hadley, this is just the Hadley?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just the Hadley and the free lunches rolled out to the elementary school.
Free lunch goes everywhere.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So where's the 67 coming from? Because before, you know, the previous 2 years, it's 38, 32.
That would be recognized through the National School Lunch Program.
That we're not part of now.
That we're not part of now. And again, the district has contributed quite a considerable sum over the years to support this program. But as we look long-term to providing food services for the district students, we feel that this is the best decision as we move forward to provide lunches to all of our student body. Again, this year, actually next fiscal year, will be hot lunches prepared by District 15 in the Hadley kitchen. And then the cold lunches will be made at District 15 and shipped out to the elementary schools.
They'll make our cold lunches.
Correct.
Everything will be done in Hadley next year.
Right.
And then the following year, all of the elementary work will be satellite from District 15.
Out of curiosity, the 09-010 actual, the budget, what was the reason for, is it just less kids bought stuff at Hadley than we expected? The 143 to 180?
We budgeted $180,000 total of sales, and we only, you know, booked $143,000, so there was a shortfall on that.
And presumably the 180 was based on previous years?
Yes.
Okay. What did we roll out differently, the whole wheat pizzas?
No, I have a feeling the $180,000 has just been a budget placeholder as a revenue line item for years. And I can't really tell you whether we've ever, even prior to 9-10, I can't tell you off the hand, whether we ever
altered that or
no. Okay. So I think it was just a placeholder for budget revenue.
Are these the numbers that don't jump out of any spreadsheet and you got to tease them out of all the funds, or that we just never looked at it before?
Probably haven't, you know, we've always kind of thought that, well, we're going to get there.
It's similar to budgeting your legal fees or other fees where predictable usage is not necessarily there. Trends may change year to year, and so the placeholder is not, it's a little more generous than it might be because you're not looking for it to be completely accurate. You want to make it sure it's in the realm. But.
So this would be a number as we move forward in the budgeting process, this would be a number that I would look at, what have we done over the past couple of years, and if we have not hit that $180,000 mark, that would be an adjustment I would make as we move forward into the next year's budget.
So if I'm reading this right, we're serving more kids but incurring less loss. It's costing us less to serve more kids.
If you're looking at this in terms of the projections?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of the reimbursement is larger. And it will be hard for us to do a prediction for the elementary when we roll that out. We'll probably go very conservative in the first year in terms of hot lunches and then grow that every year as people become more comfortable and more families take advantage of it.
And then all revenues received from Hadley sales go to D15, but we don't have a set dollar projection that, you know, Hadley has to sell $140,000 worth of, I mean, D15 doesn't care.
No, there's no minimums in the contract. It's just a matter of whatever is posted to our, whatever of the sales that are posted through our systems would be remitted to District 15 on a monthly basis. And then we're sharing the national school lunch reimbursement so that they can cover their actual meal cost production.
Okay. The whole packet is on the front hallway.
Oh, I had the whole packet. I just didn't have
the
sheet.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments on this on the proposal as we presented it thus far?
I apologize for walking in late. I guess the one thing I was just wondering was what is the cost difference? You know, I understand revenues coming in and our share and portion of that. But I guess maybe you're just talking about this, is what is the true cost?
Well, the true cost is what would, if you look in under the 2009-10 actuals, that's what the district contributed to this program, $109,500.
I guess I'm not looking for each.
And the cost of the added program?
Well, what is the cost, the total cost here? I'm not looking at who's kicking in what, but you know, if you look at it from a pure cost.
So that would be those.
The 144 number?
Well,
but you're removing some of the accounting out of here because it's going to be District 15's problem, right? Anything they make at Hadley, they keep.
But in theory, they would build that into the cost of the charges, right? I mean, it's not, unless they're just going to eat it all.
The arrangement with them that we've set up and that's in the intergovernmental agreement isn't so much that they're going to charge us $2.75 a meal for all meals served, and we write them a check for that. It's a matter of how we're sharing the incoming revenue. So as meals are sold at Hadley, that monthly revenue goes to District 15. And then they get to keep a portion of the reimbursement. So it's not like a managed, it's not like how we pay from Aramark now, where they actually bill us on a monthly basis, and then we pay from our revenues, you know, generated from the system, and we actually write them a $20,000 check every month or whatever. It's not going to be that kind of an accounting of it. You know, we'll have our sales and we'll have the accounting and the tracking of it, but they're not going to give us a management bill every month that equates to you served 400 lunches, 300 bag lunches every day or whatever it was, times X equals this, and then write us a big check. It's a combination of the revenue sharing. So we'll be writing them a check, but it's not like a management contract type of calculation.
When we have had food services provided by Aramark, we have a contract with them, and in there they tell us this is how much is going to be charged per meal, this is how much is management fees. They have all specific fees rolled out. So when we sign a contract, we signed a contract last year where fees would approximate $275,900. Now, they only came in at $270,000 that we actually paid to them. But we know that up front, we have a pretty good idea up front of what that contract involved with for Aramark.
Is that what you're talking about in terms of true cost?
No, I'll have to think about a more articulated question. I guess when I look at what I do and make buy analysis at work, you just don't look at how much, I'll say, did the food cost, but what is the fix? What
right.
is the overhead?
What's
mm-hmm.
right.
Some of that, and I'm sure they would be billing us, hey, to manage it. Mm-hmm.
There's an administrative fee, right. that sort of thing.
There's all those fixes.
Okay. And then we're doing some sharing of staff. Most of the staff will be hired by District 15, but we'll have a few employees, three employees, that we'll pay for. Is that what you're talking about, more or less?
Yeah, just what is the total cost with everything.
More right? itemized.
No, just...
Just the total dollars.
I think itemized would be good.
I got to think...
What District 15 did is they came up with a per meal cost to cover all of their costs.
Right.
To cover the delivery service they're going to do, to cover
administration.
Their staff over there, that they're hiring that are going to work at Hadley. So basically it's a per meal cost, but they're not going to bill us on a per meal. So so it's kind of like they built it in as a per meal is how they're covering their overhead per se. Okay, so it's a per meal, but they're not going to bill us on a per meal. We're going to deal with it with the revenue sharing, okay, to cover the cost. So
I guess that's the part I'm a little confused. I mean, I get, that's what I'm saying. It's like when I want to quote how much a part is going to cost, they say, well, it's this much iron, but this much labor, this much overhead.
Right.
But okay. Which I hear is what you're saying, but they're not billing it.
But the agreement works it out as a percentage split of...
Of the revenues that are coming into the program, either through the cash sales at Hadley, plus a portion of the National School Lunch Program reimbursement.
And then who sets the price of the lunch?
We set that with them, and we will be changing the lunches will be changing at Hadley going into next year. We're still talking about the range of what they will be, but they are going to be going up. And that's the driver of that isn't so much the fact that we're changing to this program. It's because overall for the National School Lunch Program, your paid meal can only be within a certain threshold of the reimbursement. So we have to meet that in that respect. So.
And the food that we have to serve is different.
Right.
So
it's going to be different.
We have probably a little higher cost of the food simply because it has to meet the federal guidelines, which is going to happen anyway, whether we stayed with Aramark
right.
or whether we made this change.
Yeah, I don't really... care what it costs. I'm just wondering, under the agreement, who has the power to say, no, we're not going to charge $4 at Hadley, we're going to charge $3.85. Who has the final say on what something's going to cost? Because it obviously affects both parties.
Basically, we do it through it, but I believe in the agreement, it says that they're going to make the recommendation because, again, they're buying the commodities and they know how the components are going to work to cover the cost.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll review it together. And we'll have to agree to it together. And then if
that's where we'll see the itemization
right.
of how they've broken down their costs
right.
to make sure that it's a justified cost.
And then when will we incur the costs of the supplies needed for the elementary schools?
The following summer.
And what was that again? Do you remember? $30,000. I can't remember.
Those ovens? The ovens you're talking about?
The heated...
The warming cabinets.
The warming cabinets, yeah.
And the serving tables. The serving tables. The Camrose that are the food's going to be transported in could very well be possibly a District 15 item. I don't know. We have to talk about that because they're coming out of their kitchen, but we will have to have serving stations that we will definitely have to buy. And then there will be some technology so they can hook into the point-of-sale system. Okay. So we're not thinking.
So we didn't have a number on that yet, did we?
We're not thinking it's going to be large. But,
and those service stations are only in the grade schools.
Correct.
Right.
Our setup, we already have the setup in hand.
Right. Hadley's already fully equipped. There's no change there at all. There's no new equipment needed because of the rollout to Hadley.
And then we would incur any expenses at Hadley for worn out equipment.
Back in 2004, we started replacing all the big equipment in the cafeteria. The only thing that wasn't replaced was the freezer and the refrigerator and, the freezer and the refrigerators.
Phyllis, I think you talked about this. I just want to make sure that I understand. The net revenue number, which is missing in projections, is that because the net revenue is netted against the cost?
The net revenue that's referenced up there, and like where the $104,000 is for the year to date current, that's whatever Hadley sales are being generated right now. We're going to see that money, but it's going to be paid out to District 15. That's why I didn't reflect it.
Or a portion of it.
Yeah. One is a budgeted number
yeah.
in the current, the way it's set up currently.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What we get to keep in revenue out of the Hadley system right now will be the $67,000, and that's the increased state and federal revenue. Conceivably, students that are paying $250 a day for a lunch or whatever at Hadley, that money is going to District 15. We'll take it in our bank and we're going to pay it to them, but it flows through. That's why I didn't reflect it here.
So it's a gross number and that number?
Right. It's an in and out. That's why I didn't reflect it here. Because basically it's not going to stay here.
So none of that $67,000 is the 104 or 143 or whatever you think. None of that for 2011, 2012 would be in that 67?
Right. The $67,000 is what our net, what we get to keep. That's our money.
In the cost sharing.
In cost sharing.
From federal and state. So
from the federal and state.
In the 11-12, there will be another line item that would say the National School Lunch Program, and all that would add up to 67.
Correct.
Are you saying about the budget?
You could add all three of these up, and that would come out to 67, the free lunch, special milk,
mm-hmm.
and
a new line item.
NSLP.
Right. That's basically what it's going to be.
Okay.
Because we will still have the special milk program and the free lunch state program for the elementary. But I didn't break it out that detailed. It's just, and then we added on the National School Lunch Program reimbursement, the portion that we're going to keep.
I apologize if you already covered this, but when I look at the difference between budget and actual, I see the net program cost difference of, we'll call it $25,000. At the very bottom, it looks like it was.
Are you going from 109.5 down to the 77,000?
I'm comparing the 09-10 budget net program cost was 85, I guess that's in the red.
Mm-hmm.
And actual is 110.
Right.
But then the budget for the next year was 86. What did we do that we didn't want to bump that up?
State revenues. If you look at the state revenues, we're budgeted at 4260, and 9-10, we budgeted 3365, and 10-11.
Right, but when I'm looking at actuals, I guess when I'm thinking of doing the budget, could just bump up the previous year's budget, or you could look at the actuals and see a mismatch and say we need to now have that budget covered.
But in order to do that, there's only one way to do that. You would have to raise your paid meal prices to cover the deficit, and that's not the way
You're saying make the 10-11 budget look more like the 09-10 actual.
Like 143.
Like the 180 we were talking about previously.
Right.
Okay.
Right. There was a budgeting error on our part. We should have reduced that number back down to be more reflective of the previous year's actual. We carried forward a bad number in that respect. Yeah.
The reason I'm asking that is.
Right.
What is that? So that's, you're anticipating extra. You didn't sell as much as you were hoping. Or people
Correct.
Didn't pay as much.
Correct. It probably is a driver of more free lunches. You know, it could very well be that we, you know, again, our free lunch program has been increasing over the years. And so.
And the free lunch is a loser for us. I mean, we only get a certain percentage reimbursement.
We get, from the state program, you get 10 cents a meal. And we were basically paying $1.75.
And under the NSLP, is it it's still a loser, only
no.
us a loser? Or
no.
Okay.
That's why you have the difference in the revenue there for the state and federal, because you are now making up your true meal cost for free, and then you're adding in another layer called reduced, which we have not been able to offer students before. And that's so the lion's share of the $124,000 expenditures in 10-11 project for 11-12 rather, is still our elementary free lunch program, because we don't get as much reimbursement for it. So that's where the lion's share is at.
In theory, the revenues would go up because kids can now buy also a hot lunch. And if you offer the hot lunch, but you're saying all the revenues go to the district.
But the cost sharing would also increase if you're selling more. If you're selling more lunches, that the money we get back will increase as well.
When you're part of the National School Lunch Program, you even get reimbursed for kids that pay. Okay, it's not much, but we also get a reimbursement for that. So again, as you broaden the
opportunity,
the participation in the National School Lunch Program, you build your revenue source, so those numbers become a lot closer. Okay, in that respect. But when you're running a lunch program and you are offering a free lunch program that's not part of the National School Lunch Program, there's not much room to make up that difference, because you're not going to increase your paid meal cost
to cover the unpaid.
Because again, if you did that, you wouldn't be in compliance with the National School Lunch Program.
I'm wondering if we were in a situation where 99% of our kids were getting free lunches, how does D15 make any money on the deal? Because all they get is what's being rung up on the registers at Hadley, right?
They're getting the lion's share of the National School Lunch Program money to cover the meal cost.
Okay.
They're getting
only plus, so that's what we're sharing.
Right.
So.
Plus, they
I thought
all,
we were getting all of
right.
it.
No.
Okay.
Plus, then they can then use the free commodities to buy product to build our meals. When you're not part of the National School Lunch Program, you don't have access to the commodity program. So again, there's some free food coming in to make the meals also that adds to this pot of like, what's your meal cost?
Right.
So you have like three different moving targets.
We're going to be going from, let's say in 09-10, $39,000 from the state and federal, up to 67.
Correct.
But, I mean, the real dollar number is a lot higher than 67.
Correct.
So 67 is our portion.
That's what our portion is. And that's what we wanted to show represent was just our portion. Instead of putting in the growth and then backing it down, this is our portion of the National School Lunch Program and the state program.
To do an apples-to-apples comparison, and we've gone back to Aramark with, you know, what D15 is proposing, and then saying, here, quote this.
We can't, because it's under the National School Lunch Program, and it has to be a sealed bid process, and it's very restrictive in nature. You can't say, what would it be? You'd have to actually publish a bid, go out to market with not just Aramark, but an open bid process, and the bid has to be reviewed and approved by the Department of Nutrition at the State Board of Ed before they actually can go out on the street.
I mean,
and we would have to administer the program, which is another huge deal for us.
Pardon me? I'm sorry.
The other three of us go ahead and
ahead. I just wanted to finish answering that question, that we would also be administering the program here rather than Aramark.
Is that something you can also put in the bid documents?
To have them do it?
I know. As part of your cost of lunch, you also provide the administration and applying all the form filling out on it.
I don't know.
Can only governmental entities get the commodities?
No. Once you're part of the National School Lunch Program, then I believe Aramark would have access to that also. Okay, I'm going to answer Drew now. How we're doing this is because since it's an intergovernmental agreement between two school districts, the State Board of Ed acknowledges the fact that District 15 now become their school food service provider.
So we don't have to
do the sealed bid process.
We don't have to be.
Correct. Because there are, you know.
The government.
Right.
A district that is already approved.
Correct.
Under their system.
Correct.
Okay.
Right. So when you're trying to measure the apples to apples, you can't at this point in time, because right now Aramark would not be able to give us any information on this, because they could be in, it could be construed that if we do actually then go out on the street, they're not, they've broken all the rules. So
we've broken the rules too.
So this is the first step to get to that point, and then it's a three-year agreement, and then once you're in the National School Lunch Program, then we're in, and if we decide that the arrangement with District 15 is not meeting our needs, we would then go out to market, but we would go out to market truly under the National School Lunch Program out to the open market, things like that. So it's kind of like a way to get into the process and still have the guidance and the administration from a proven system and the assistance in that respect. And then hopefully I think it will be beneficial to both sides. And just to have a reduction of what the overall program deficit would be, knowing that you still have the elementary program that first year that's not part of the National School Lunch Program, so that's what we're losing, the lion's share of the dollars.
Just to give you an idea, we provide over 300 free lunches to the elementary schools a day. So at $2 a head times 300, you can see how much the cost is just per day. And we have 160-some serving days in the district.
And if we did this, they reimburse all of it or just part of it?
Most of it, they don't reimburse. I don't think they reimburse all of it.
Well, the National School, the factors that she's using for 11-10 and the projections that she gave us was, it's for a free lunch, it's $2.72 a meal.
And what's on charge?
We charge $2 and $3 right now at handling.
$1.75. As opposed to 10 cents.
So, I mean, that's, you know, and then they do increase those reimbursement rates each year. So again, it's dealing, all of our projections are based on the 10-11 reimbursement schedule for the meal and the special milk and things like that.
So going back to the net income, I do understand what you're doing. I guess from my standpoint, I like to see gross numbers and see that. Even if I net to zero, it kind of, it gives me a clearer cost of what total costs are.
I mean, overall, it sounds like a good program, and you know, I like the part of getting the hot lunch and grade schools, maybe just because I had it behind me. But you know, just in terms of the comparison, I'm just wondering how can we. I guess, you know, I'm just trying to envision like Aramark or somebody saying a year later, hey, we can do all this stuff for you guys, and guess what, it's going to be this much lower. Maybe not.
Aramark won't come back to us with that question. You know, we're part of the National School Lunch Program. There are certain rules and regulations that we have to follow, as well as the vendors out there. And there are very strict guidelines that everyone has to adhere to, or they could lose their accreditation. So not quite that easy to just enter into sort of candid discussions with an individual vendor. We can't do it. Neither can a vendor come to us and enter into those conversations.
Okay.
I think you both Bob and Bill have done a tremendous amount of work on this, and I applaud what you've done. We both potentially are really good at that.
Well, again, we're taking a long-term look at providing food services to our district a number of years off. Although we have implementation next year with Hadley's, we're looking long-term. Where does this take our food services?
Do you have all of the blue? Do we have multiple copies of the blue?
Dan or Steve's.
Oh, no problem. I just want to make sure I didn't miss something. I don't want to review stuff you've already covered. I mean, that's fine. This is something.
According to this analysis, Steve, there is something that is a free lunch.
Cool.
No. No. There is no free lunch.
Okay, no any other questions on food service at this time?
How long has the district 15 been doing this?
Well, they've had an agreement in place partnering with District 16 for the past couple of years.
But they've been offering their own food service
since they built,
I don't know when their referendum was. Do you remember, Julie? 2003, maybe?
And it's been this healthier option. You know, I'm just thinking if you guys, the kids actually eat it.
Well, the next step that their food service director would like to do is to come out and meet with Hadley students, talk about the menus. There's not a lot of choice in them, but what they've done in 15... She might give them a tasting, but they don't have an... You know, it's not like in the past where kids might sit around a table and say, well, I want to have this for on our menu and this. The restrictions are just so much greater with the national lunch program, and those are the federal guidelines that are coming down for everybody. So,
like those restaurant shows?
No,
and they have both vendors stand there while they...
Yeah, could like the wedding, you know, when you go do the tasting.
So they won't have... Like, they don't have fried foods. So she will meet with the students and try to get them to be advocates of the change lunch. There'll be somewhat of a change, you know, as we explained last time. You can't just get a piece of pizza or an order of fries.
You have to eat the whole.
We have to take it. You have to eat it, but you have to take it.
You have to take certain elements.
There's
four or five components.
And that's a legal requirement. So if you come in and you're audited and you didn't offer that, then...
The free kids still doesn't turn it down.
Actually, I have to say, now I've never eaten their lunches at their buildings, but anything that's prepared from Marquardt for meetings and that sort of thing is... It's fantastic.
So, are there any other questions at this time?
Who's this?
Any objections to taking this to the board for discussion?
No. Tonight?
No. Next.
We'll follow the... And you have the intergovernmental agreement. The next process will be taking them to a full discussion to the board and for action. Then we would enter into the intergovernmental agreement and begin to roll out the process for next year.
And just one other side note, the agreements were reviewed by both attorneys. Our attorney called their attorney to actually talk about the word, the verbiage, and whatever. So it's already been through both attorney reviews, and they've incorporated the changes that we asked them to. So
we're looking at probably the end of April for us to vote on the
That's the second meeting in April.
Okay.
Okay. All right, then the next order of business this evening is just an update on employee health insurance plan renewal. As you know, last year the administration brought a recommendation to the board, finance committee, and then to the board about moving our insurance services from Blue Cross Blue Shield as a standalone into the EBC, the Educational Benefits Cooperative, that's administered by Gallagher and Company. Everyone on this current committee, as well as the board, is familiar with our reasoning behind it. We had experienced some significant double-digit increases over the past couple of years, and the main sales feature of this cooperative is the fact that it's sort of, there's a banding effect that takes place, that your individual losses as a district aren't nearly as significant given the fact that we're considering 18,000 lives as part of this cooperative versus the 400 lives that we currently insure. So we did join the cooperative as of July 1st of last year. That to join a cooperative takes a minimum, it takes a 3-year agreement. So we're in for the next couple of years through June 30th, 2013. To give you an idea, what the programs that we offer here in the district, we offer a PPO, we offer an HMO Illinois, and then we also add sort of a lower cost alternative in the Blue Advantage HMO. That's what we offer for our employees and their eligible dependents. Last month, during February, Laurie and I attended the preliminary renewal meetings. At that time, we received the rates they presented to the member districts. They presented what the average rate increase was going to be for the cooperative as a whole, as well as what our rates are expected to be for for District 41. Overall, the loss ratio for the cooperative was 89.1, which would indicate an increase in premium on the PPO plan of 8.5%. We were very fortunate this past year, at least year to date, and then our loss ratio was established at 57.4, which projects out to a 3.5% increase. As I said earlier, we have had significantly greater increases, double-digit increases, over the past couple of years. On page 2 of this board report, finance report, there's also some features that are going to be required as part of national health care. And a couple of these are pre-existing exclusion for children will add approximately 15.15% to our premiums. Removing the lifetime maximum will add 0.1%. The annual limit, adult preventive, removing now will also add another 0.1%. So there's about a 0.35% increase in addition to the increase to base of 3.5%. There'll be an increase of about 0.35% as a result of the national health care plan that the current national administration has enacted. So we are expecting an overall increase in the PPO of about 3.85%. We are due to attend, Lori and I are due to attend another meeting on April 20th, where they will give us our final rates, and then we'll be bringing you recommendations. We'll be presenting to the Finance Committee and the Board for discussion and action. I also did want to mention that the HMO Illinois and the Blue Advantage HMO, there is not a banding that takes effect for those two programs, and their expected increase is to be approximately 12.1%. So significant difference between the percentage increases. And I was presenting this information to provide the Finance Committee with an update in terms of what the expectations will be over the next month, and we'll be bringing you the renewals as they become available.
So the group overall, the EBC, they still split out different increases?
Yes, they do.
I guess for some
reason. That's one of the main selling features. And what happens is that every district has its own incurred loss ratio and its own increase to premiums, but there's also the overall banding that takes effect for the group as a whole. Now, this year, we experienced a significantly lower or a better incurred loss ratio than what we've received over the past couple of years, and that's why we came in actually 5% less than the average increase to premium base that's going to occur for the group as a whole.
Is that a weighted average, or you just mean district average is going to be 8.5?
You know, I think it's just a district average. That's what we've, at least that's what I've taken from
the middle of the band.
Yeah.
It's the thing of a band that is like your basic increase if you have, I can't remember what the either side of the loss ratio is. If you're within the median band, your increase is 8.5. If you're below that median band, which we were, you have a lower increase, and if you're above it, based on your loss ratio, you're under.
So it's the median, not the average.
So I remember when we were going through this, we had all the charts that showed some of the options plus one to the EDC. What was our projected, and I know we projected out some of those increases.
Oh, we projected, because we had experienced double-digit increases, we projected 10% increases. the financial projections which we've given the board and which PMA has built into their finance model over the next 5 years took annual increases of 10%. So just this year alone will have a significant impact on what those projections actually turn out to be and how we work our finance models as we move forward. Because the vast, vast majority of our members, I think about 79 individuals are part of the HMO plan. The vast, vast majority are PPO member participants.
So what was our projected, when we were looking at choosing this option, do you remember what we said for this upcoming year in projected?
I don't remember. We can look back at the board report,
yeah.
But I don't remember. I want to say it was
8.
Between 8 and 10.
8 yeah. 10%.
But I have to look back.
And 8 would have been very, looking back, it would have been, last time would have been rather conservative. Now this year, it proved to be quite beneficial for us.
And it isn't the kind of thing, I mean, we probably will still keep ratio projections somewhere around 8% because that's the average band for EBC. Still under the double, you know, a double digit increase. But then if we have a poor performing year, which our recent history has, we've not been, we've been performing rather high, then it kind of evens out over the course of time.
Do we know roughly what 5 percentage points between 3.5 and 8 means dollar wise to the district?
You know what? I haven't done that calculation, but I can certainly take a look at it.
Yeah, I was wondering what the delta was in dollars.
The EBC uses Blue Cross.
Mm-hmm. Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Are they keeping that again for earlier?
Yes, they are.
If you had that, you said that the HMOs are reflecting higher
loss ratio
increases.
Pardon?
Premium increases.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the. So if you added that up, added all the different pieces, do you have a rough idea of what that number is going to be?
If I were to take the 12.1% increase for the HMO, the 3.5%. You know, I don't know what that sort of blended increase would be, but again, we have set 80% of our people, 85% of our people are under the PPO plan. So let's just say 85% of our program participants, their rate increase will be 3.5%. That other 15% would be experiencing a 12.1% increase.
But I'm still not wanting it, right? It's probably closer to 4.5 or 5.
Yeah, given the number of lives that the plan has.
Which is a significant improvement from the last couple of years.
That's correct.
We have 311 in the PPO and 80 in the HMO.
Yes.
Plus the
penalty. Right, plus the defendant. Those are the insured lives for our district. 80 in the HMO and Gloria says 311 in the PPO.
So actually, we're lowering. The other groups.
Well, this year it worked out that way. We weren't actually trended lower than the average. And significant.
They were glad to have us as newcomers this year.
Is the 0.35% increase because of health care reform, is that affected by our loss ratio? Like if you were in the middle of the band, the median or whatever, would you be seeing 0.35? Or would you be seeing 0.85?
Actually, it has to do with the plan design. This is the cost of different plan designs. For example, that pre-exclusion for children, because of health care reform, it has to be removed. And based on our current design, we have 365 days in terms of the pre-exclusion period, and that has to be removed, and the cost for that is 0.5. They did an analysis of all the different plans and gave each district their individual increase based on the health care reform. Like, for example, if Mark Ford's in there, they may not have that as a pre-existing condition, so it's not going to be an increase that they have.
Sure.
Or maybe they have
something more.
So everybody had their own individual form based on the analysis of their plan design against the health care reform to say what the increase would be.
I guess I didn't realize.
Performance was different.
I didn't think we had. So every district has their own plan.
And mm-hmm. That's the nice part about it, is every district gets to keep their own plan design.
So how's Blue Cross? I mean, what's the benefit of Blue Cross?
Well, the benefit, Arthur Gallagher.
We got a new plan, everybody has a different plan.
And Gallagher manages all those individual plans. here's Blue Cross, here's the individual districts, Gallagher's in the middle, acting as our representative, but also managing the entire Blue Cross plan for all the members.
I think the advantage to Blue Cross is the sheer numbers, that they can be guaranteed.
Right.
But to be specific to your question as well, that the performance would not affect those costs. It's just the design of your plan that affects the costs.
So does that mean the 26-year-olds and under allowed, is that whatever that kicks in will be another percentage?
And actually, the change for that is minimal because the state of Illinois has required us to cover adult children up to age 26. The federal regulations that will come into play will just now be if they're married, we have to cover them too. The state guidelines said if they're married, we didn't.
A married 25-year-old?
They're still dependent?
Yes. Yes. We can't cover their spouse. We can't cover their children if they have children. But we have to cover them if their parents. Married or unmarried, employed, unemployed, 26 offspring, they can be
employed. Even employed?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Even employed.
With an employer that offers health insurance.
Correct.
Wow.
I see a new law to.
So it won't be, I mean, from our standpoint, that new law is pretty minimal. It's nothing that they thought.
So. That's the plan as we know it. This is the latest information that we have. We'll be looking to bring.
We don't ask for approval. Yeah.
Presenting this as an update, and in May, after the final meeting that we have with EBC, we'll be bringing final numbers to you. And then additionally, we'll be meeting over the next few weeks regarding the dental plan, and you'll be receiving an update on that just as soon as the information becomes available.
How does this percentage increase again roll into the employee contribution? Is it, so there's a percentage they cover, we cover, so the whole thing increases 3.85% and the split, the ratio stays the same?
Yes,
it's still a fixed split. They're going to pay 28% or 30% or 10-12% of the increase in the ratio.
And in collective bargaining, we bargained the percentage, not the plan.
We bargained the plan originally.
Okay. Well, I mean, we're in a mode now where, for the most part, that's not...
Right.
There's a separate team that picks the plan. We just...
Well, but it's our final...
Yeah, if we were going to make major changes to the plan, as we have discussed, I mean, previously, we would probably get a demand bargain. But that plan was created 2006, spring of 2006.
Any other questions on the pending renewal for insurance premiums?
So that doesn't need to come to the
board. It will, as the information is, we're able to...
Just a report, but not a...
Not an action.
Not an action, because we joined the cooperative for 3 years.
Okay.
Then the next order of business this evening will be the performance benchmarking, Glen Ellen 41, and Ann is going to be presenting that report.
We just wanted to share this information with you. It is an expenditure that does not exceed $10,000, so I don't think it requires board approval, but wanted to have a discussion with Finance Committee just so that you are aware and I guess make sure, you know, to some extent that you support this. Lori actually is the person who discovered this this individual through various means. One, through attending a workshop at a conference where a district was presenting their benchmarking data and the process they underwent. And she found it very intriguing. And then she discovered that several of her former colleagues currently work in districts where this benchmarking is being done. And so between Kildeer, Cary, and District 54, Schaumburg, we have kind of firsthand information about how this benchmarking process has occurred and feel as though it would be a great opportunity for us to get some very realistic data on how we perform against other peer districts and picking some benchmarking districts that really meet all the criteria that we want it to meet. We view this as an internal document, not as much of a public document, though there are pieces of it we would certainly want to make public, and we would ask when he finishes his work to help us prepare a report to give to the board relative to the benchmarks that we've created. We would use a collaborative process to establish those benchmarks using our principles. We thought perhaps a board member might like to sit on the benchmarking group to determine how we establish our benchmarks. And then really we would use this as a way of guiding ourselves not only around our expenditures, we think it's a way of beginning to help us develop a cost-benefit model. In and of itself, it's not a cost-benefit model. It's just a way of helping us see a different picture around the dollars we spend, how do they compare to other similar districts, how does our performance compare to those same districts, and when you look at bang for the buck, do our programs seem to give us the best bang for the buck? We can disaggregate, you know, we can look at programs such as ELL, gifted, special education, as well as the whole of the district and the benchmarks. I spoke to Clayton Graham today, and he wanted me to know that he's also found a national database that would allow us to do some national benchmarking to see how our students are performing across the country. And what the way he's doing that is that there are common questions in a national database that state assessments across the country draw from. So we'd be able to take those common performance indicators, and even though our standards are different state to state, the test bank of questions are the same. So we'd be able to see very particularly how our students are doing really in a national comparison as well. So we think it's a great next step for us in deepening our understanding of our performance, deepening our connection between our performance and our expenditures, and you know, we'd like to take an opportunity to utilize his services.
Yeah, I mean, I've always asked you about these types of things.
And we've done it pretty unscientifically.
Right. You know, I would definitely want to talk about what the peer districts are. He seems mm-hmm. to be a little more, you know, Cook County, McHenry County, Lake County based.
It's where he does, it's wherever he
I know, lives. It's where he lives and stuff.
Oh, no, it's where he's working.
Yeah.
I mean, wherever he's working, that's where
I don't know if it's easier, you know, if he's already got certain districts, but, you know, for us, obviously, DuPage County districts are more important. It's always been hard mm-hmm. to compare to the unit districts that you probably, you know, a realtor would say, you know, homeowners comparing living along the train line in Elmhurst, Glen Allen, Wheaton, Naperville, you know.
Yeah, it just, you know, I have the worksheet actually of one of the districts that did benchmarking, and he does not select the benchmarks. You select your own benchmarks.
Okay.
And it showed their worksheet and what were their important criteria. So you identify your criteria, and then it just showed how they eliminated the districts, so they got down to five or six districts that they wanted to use. He recommends no more than eight, I think, you know,
sure.
in terms of your total benchmarking. But he doesn't do that selection.
Okay.
You do your own selection. He provides you the data.
Yeah, I don't have a problem. I, and, you know, in terms of even 10,000, I know as a board we chose not to spend money to get a real survey done of the community, and then here. I mean, even though I like this value, I don't want to be a hypocrite and then say, oh, but it's okay to go spend $10,000 on this.
Well, it's...
although I realize it would take a lot of time to do that, although it took a lot of Julie's time, you know, to put together the survey. I guess I'm just kind of thinking out loud about
mm-hmm.
that.
Well, that's why, even though it didn't require board approval, I felt it was important to at least bring it here for discussion.
But I've always been interested in this type of information. I don't know if you can get to the question of, is this value? You know, there's
as I said, that's not.
And I don't know if he originally created this to prove a point as part of a committee that was trying to either defeat or approve a referendum.
That came from Max McGee when they first started working.
Yeah,
with
but
that
this. Yeah, mm-hmm. but it looked like this Barrington Citizens.
Oh, that the original was related to a referendum.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who wanted, you know, answer these questions. Do
right.
we have good value? You
right.
know, are we paying too much in school taxes?
Right.
And unfortunately, what you're spending and the value what you spend on it is really decoupled from the burden placed on your homeowners to actually fund that. Because you can say, well, we have X amount of students, we spend this much. All the metrics say, you know, it's you're spending X amount per student, all these things are great. But then now you take that amount of money and say, okay, now we're going to spread it across your tax base.
Mm-hmm.
The exact same metrics where you took the tax base out and said you're within those, different homeowners in different districts would pay different dollar amounts and feel to them the question of, is this a value? Am I paying too much?
Right.
Would be different.
Right.
Somebody who lives in Salt Creek who's paid, you know, 0.9 or something, and we've got 3.5% tax rate. It's when you start pulling
those
together,
that, but
it's
I don't
to,
think.
And
that,
I know
the question of value is not a benchmarking question.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a very much of an individual district question.
I guess one of my questions is when you get the data, what do you then?
Well, what we would do with the data it's a source for monitoring, so we can then follow the data annually for the other districts because we now have the index that would be published annually. We're able to share that information with our schools in the school improvement process in terms of how do you compare to other benchmark districts, which is will have a little bit better indicator, a little bit more fine-tuned indicator than we currently have in our meets and exceeds with ISAT. So we would use it for school improvement purposes as well as looking at program evaluation. If benchmark programs are spending X amount of dollars and getting these results, what are we getting? You know, with the dollars we spend, are the results similar? Are they dissimilar? Is there something to learn from those other districts? I will tell you that District 54, which has a high reputation of scoring very well on standardized measures, when they saw how their ELL program was performing, it helped cause a total revamp of that program. If you find that you're performing really well in this area, not so well in this area, then what impact might that have for curriculum revisions? What impact might that have for professional development?
So it sounds like you can help maybe drive towards the priorities on those areas.
Mm-hmm. It helps. It helps you validate, or it helps you change and alter some of the decisions you're making about your priorities, and it helps schools have a picture of how they're performing against other like districts, and whether or not there's something to learn from another school that may be performing in a similar or performing better with a similar population.
I guess one of the things I'm concerned about is our subgroup population, and by that I mean mm-hmm. program populations, be it gifted or ELL or whatever. Do we have enough population to make the comparison statistically significant? And also, especially if you're talking about how does our program perform as opposed to District X, well, same thing on District X's side. Are their numbers enough to, you compare 10 students here and 10 students there, well, two or three kids skews everything mm-hmm. on either side.
Right.
So I guess do we feel, at least as far as subgroups are concerned, that we'll be able to, at the end of the day, have meaningful data?
I think from the standpoint of subgroups, we'd really be looking at programmatic analyses. So if we break down just our ethnic population, we may not be able to we may not feel as though that's a relatively large enough group. We'd be able to see the data,
mm-hmm.
and it'll give us a picture, but we may not, we might not do a financial analysis against that, whereas we would with our ELL program. If we're, spending X dollars and districts A, B, C, D, and E are spending X dollars, and our performance differences either highlight for us, oh, this is great news, we're really doing a great job with the dollars we have, or not so great news, then, we move from there. But I don't think we would look at, let's say, all of our individual student populations. We'd be able to see the benchmark, But we may not, we probably have to have a conversation about how statistically relevant is that because of the number of students that may involve.
Right. And are we looking, I mean, we have kind of these overall goals of benchmarking against 7-8 districts, whatever it is. But then there may be other, some of those districts may not have the populations we have. So are you going to have,
ultimately, that
for overall look, mm-hmm. here's our 8. For ELL, here's our 8. You know, are you going to have to do this piecemeal kind of benchmarking?
And I can't answer that question for sure because I think that's something that the team that comes together to identify the benchmarks will have, benchmarking districts will have to have. But what I noticed in this one district was they had broken it out by a variety of factors, and student demographics was one of those factors. And so they identified their benchmark districts that had those characteristics. So, like, they had characteristics of, like, 5 different categories. Then they started to identify which in those benchmark, those categories had the most alike. So, in other words, you're trying to narrow it down to the districts that are most like you in every aspect that's of interest to you. But it's possible you would have a district that you might choose to benchmark against that is not totally like you but has a factor that you really want to see if there's something about. But I think the goal is to try and narrow across all the systems that are out there which ones are most like yours, which is why DuPage is important, but it's not the only factor.
No, I understand that. For some of the financial reasons, I think it is. I have another question on several.
Well, I'm just going to say, as a person who's used consultants before and having been a consultant, I don't feel so bad about saying this. It looks like you just basically took all this information, made a database, and now we tell him what to sort it on. And then he says, here's your charts.
Right.
And so in terms of trying to figure out the value add, I mean, there is some value add. I guess, you know, I had like either $10,000, $200 an hour, 50 hours of work. Maybe if he was doing this from scratch, there would be some, but for just what I'm seeing mm-hmm. as a sorting option.
He's certainly selling his database.
Right. I'm wondering if there's other similar, because mm-hmm. the data's already out there. He just... You know,
it's proprietary.
Is it proprietary or it's all publicly available data? No. He's just compiled it no. into a database. So what's the proprietary piece, I guess?
But he created the indexing of it. I mean, he created
the cross reference
in the data, the analytical tool and the actual data that he has done for every district in the state of Illinois.
Right, and just the example he had was from 02, and he talks about it was so hard to take this text and related data, which I've done, and even Excel has gotten a lot better.
Oh, yeah, I know. He's just trying to say how unfriendly the information on the ISB website is for those who want to do something like that.
So the question I think that you're raising, Dan, is it's not work we have the time to do. Is it work that could be done if you had the time? Probably. Is it worth the cost? We don't have staff to do it. I mean, so it's definitely worth that because you'd have to hire somebody.
And it's not done all the same way in how you want to compare it. You might go about it a different way. And
we've asked him to do some other things that he hasn't done for other districts. I mean, the national, when I asked him about national comparisons, he had not done that research. And so he's, you know, done some of that research to say whether or not that we could do it. We've asked him about MAP, whether or not there's something we could do with MAP that would be in the same vein. So, I mean, he's not... it's not a package that here's what you get, and you don't get any more and you don't get any less. But he is selling his database.
Now the MAP data isn't publicly available. You have to pay the NWEA to get it, right? Will they break it out for you by district?
I'm not even sure what we could get. We do get a national norm
right.
from NWEA, and we can see their scatter plot. But we don't get individual.
I don't think you can ask them for some other individual district.
We can't get there in districts, you know, the districts. But there may be other districts that he works with or that are in this area where we might be able to create. that kind of database. Cabinet has met with him once. I met with him a second time, and as we looked at our long-range plan, we felt it was something that would bring value to us and help us do the work of deepening, which is how we see the next long-range plan.
I read through this. This is very interesting. It's an interesting premise. I guess when you talk to him in person, does he sound like the way he writes?
I didn't read with that lens.
Is that something you notice in most people, that they do or don't sound like the way they write?
In the white paper he did, had a certain hint to it that
bothered you.
But this is not him, is it? This is written by.
I think that's just a cover sheet. I think the rest of it's not the actual report, or is he explaining it?
It was done.
This document was done in conjunction with several people.
Okay.
But I guess I'll characterize him as very outgoing, very animated, and loves what he's doing. And I mean, Julie and Bob and Lori are here. I don't know. They could
energetic.
And Mike. They could add to that.
A lot of passion
for what he does.
I guess my other. I'm intrigued by this. I truly am. I think this is very.
He's actually getting ready to go work for the Boston Red Sox in about 3 weeks. To do statistical work for them this summer, which he's done for them throughout the last maybe 10 years.
Not the guy who was on 60 Minutes in Kansas City, is it?
Well, he said I'm one of several who have done work for them, but this summer he's doing analysis.
The Cubs haven't called him yet.
For their line, their pitchers and their lineups or something like that. Very
interesting. In terms of, there's an awful lot of information. So, theoretically, we can drill down.
Oh, yeah.
Internally, is this an option for kind of the teacher evaluation? Could this be used to do that?
So this is not going to look at individual students. He doesn't have individual student data.
I don't think the issue there is mining the data as opposed to how you evaluate teachers.
This could help us. This will help us understand how a school is doing, how the system is doing. I can't remember if we talked about grade levels. I think we could do grade levels. But we can't go to individual students.
But this is a one-time thing. One-time presentation on.
Yes, unless you hire him. Some districts hire him on an annual basis for $6,000.
How much do we pay PMA on a yearly basis to do all their
$15,000.
Okay. And this guy, I mean, do you feel he's two-thirds of all the stuff PMA does in terms of presentations? I'm asking your opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. From an academic perspective.
It's a different set of data.
Yeah.
I understand. But I would ask you, though, at least from some of the metrics that we have, as an individual district comparing to these other units, we really have to throw the high school in there. I mean, it would be better if, like, Lombard and all their feeders did it together. And then some of the metrics comparing to unit districts you could do with a high school and elementary together. And possibly all the districts could get that information, and it might cost less because he's getting it all together. Because a lot of the real estate issues and all that. You can't, how do you break out what it costs to educate K-8 in Wheaton and Naperville versus us?
Well, that's assuming we would want to have that as our benchmark.
But if you've got any financial benchmarks, that's always the problem we have. We can only compare them to other elementary districts.
Well, they mentioned kind of what you're talking about doing in this white paper where they make up unit districts. You know, they'll include.
But it's easy to make a unit district from, yeah, that's what I'm saying. But if you're going to make up a unit district, we have to throw Glenbard into it. I'm just curious. If you can sell us and you like it, you know, this might provide, it might be interest to all the Glenbards, you know, and West, because there's a lot of similar financial information, at least from the tax base that you have already. So I don't know. I'm just curious. So you talk to them. If there's some way we can go as a group and it would be a better value for all the districts than individually 10K just for us. Because unfortunately, I can tell you, for me, yeah, I'm interested in that, but once you start throwing these financial things, it's really, I have to add the high school and the elementary school together
in terms of the burden,
the cost of education, you know, and compare, okay, is it really a better value in a unit district like in Wheaton or Naperville or Elmhurst?
Is that, so what you're suggesting is that's a question you'd want answered as
yes.
opposed to the questions that you're adding a question to be answered.
That's one of the questions that could be answered. There's obviously academic questions that are just based on the grade and stuff. But, I think there are questions that, unfortunately, you know, the way we're split up, that somebody looks at it.
I'm just going to restate this question because that's not a question we've talked about.
Okay.
We have been very self-contained in terms of this information for us and what it would mean for us. But you're asking a little more global question, which I think is fine. Is the value of our education, which would be Glenbard Associate District, I'm just going to say.
I'm not throwing value in. I'm just putting comparisons. Sometimes it's just there to prove, to show, you know, how...
Well,
you know, how
it is a value.
Rates are set. But I'm just saying, determine, is it a value? I mean...
It begs the more fundamental question to me is, what are we looking to answer? What are our objectives in the study?
We're looking to answer probably three basic questions. First, how are our students performing against benchmark districts that we've identified in the areas tested by the state of Illinois right now? How does our per pupil cost match up with our performance using our benchmark districts, and how do our programs perform? And same financial question with benchmark districts. So those are the fundamental questions we want to ask.
Excuse me, we have two items of this. This evening. So.
Well, so I'm sensing there's not a lot of comfort for us to do this project.
I think if it were under 5K, I don't think, at 10K, I think people are like...
Well, if it was under 5K, I don't think I would have even brought it here to you.
Like a make versus buy. I mean, if you make someone in-house do it, how much is it going to cost versus it's already done it, go on the outside? It's probably similar.
Well, I don't know that we have anyone here with the expertise to do it.
Yeah, he's compiled a lot of stuff. It's just...
I think you said here's why we want to do it, and this is how it's going to help. So, I don't know.
I'm just wondering if we're going to pick the benchmark districts. So we're only talking about looking at eight other districts in this analysis.
Probably. I mean, you may have as many as you want.
Like a lot of the data, presumably they spit out a district report card or something similar, right?
He has data of all the districts and all the schools in this database.
He's done the data retrieval piece of it.
He's done all the work to create the database and update it yearly.
Are you saying, would any of the benchmark districts be amenable to going in together on it? Maybe that's just one option. Hey, we want a benchmark. Are you guys interested in doing it? If not, we're not going to share it with
you. Well, we weren't going to share it anyway.
Well, I'm sure the contract says something that he can.
I mean, it probably would go up. Maybe if you had two different, it would be 20 grand.
Well, I'll tell you what. I guess, given the time, putting a halt on this, I feel like there's a lot of questions that you have. I will speak with him. And I am happy to take it to the Glenbard Associate Districts. I don't know that without his presentation, though, that they're going to have an idea. And I'm not sure they're the benchmarks we would select either for ourselves. So
the Associate District.
Yeah.
District.
For academic benchmarks.
Yeah. I think that's a...
If you compare... I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. Finish this question, then Bob got it. If we choose it based on a financial factor alone, what you're saying, we need to be able to identify what's around us.
So we'll bring this back again.
Well,
for more discussion.
We will continue to discuss it internally, and we'll have some questions, and I'll have some questions for him. If we, you know, if we're going to bring it back at this time, we will bring it back to Finance Committee.
Okay. So we're going to move on to SmartBoard Law. I just want to say one thing. The 2011-2012 copier paper bid results came back. We went out to bid. Prices came back at 25 cents a case, more than last year. Not a very significant increase. Total expenditures are expected to be approximately $54,000. This is something we do annually. And it's just the cost of us doing business. So I just wanted to get that in. Mike needs the remainder of the time.
As a policy guy, does this bid quote meet our match our policy of a certain amount of percentage recyclables and all that good stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. That was part of the bid deck. Okay, I'll let Michael take over.
We currently have about 37 smart boards in the district right now that we've been piloting over the last couple of years through PEP grant dollars and emergency fund dollars. And we've got a group of features that have been piloting these over the last couple of years. And the response has been very good. We've got a user group of about a dozen features that meet on a monthly basis, discuss what we're doing, share ideas and projects, and the response has been very positive to having the boards in the room. The students are able to interact with the boards the way the information is immediately there for them, as well as some pieces of our curriculum already anticipate the use of a smart board as part of the curriculum, like our social studies curriculum. The TCI site already has tools built in for the use of an interactive whiteboard. So based on this, we're looking at doing a wide-scale rollout over the next couple of years of smart boards. We're going to get at least half of the district covered, the classrooms covered, with smart boards this year, and we'll evaluate for next year the remaining classrooms that we've put the benefit of having the board. I think by having a two-year cycle like this, it gets us the newest and most current available. We're already kind of going to allow for several years when models change, technology changes, and then this way it becomes more of a quick refresh cycle for when it is time. To come back and refresh them. We've worked with a couple vendors over the last couple of years, COTG, Chicago Office Technology Group, and United Visual for handling our projector and smart board installations. And both companies do a fine job. So we asked them both for a proposal on 72 boards, which would be about half of our classrooms currently. We got pricing back, and Chicago Office Technology came in lower, primarily because of their installation costs. So both vendors are also part of they have the ability to sell the boards at a consortium price. They're part of the buying group. So we get a special price from the smart board. So the boards are going to be the same price no matter what. The materials and labor costs are really what separated the two vendors. And COTG came out a little cheaper, so we're recommending installation of 72 boards throughout the district, be done by COTG. We would pay for the hardware a cost separately. That would be on a five-year lease, a dollar buyout lease. And then we would pay the installation costs on a separate one-time payout to cover for that.
Dollar buyout means at the end of the
lease
you pay a dollar.
And we only
own it. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty typical of what we've been doing.
It's pretty standard for equipment that we figure to hang on to for longer than the period of the lease. Obviously, the smart's been in place maybe even for 10 years. Smart's been around for a while. We've got quite a few boards out there. Several of our neighboring districts have already adopted the technology with a substantial rollout. So, ABI has a substantial rollout of smart boards as well as. I believe District 15 and Queen B have them as well. So it's a pretty common piece of technology.
I you know, we do this at work all the time, and there's a tax reason for it. But why do we always use instead of buy? If there's a problem in the 5 years, they come out and replace it, or what, I mean, what's?
Well, it'd be under warranty.
Yeah. Either way, though, it'd be under warranty.
Correct.
Right. From the manufacturer.
Right, regardless of how it is.
So, I always just wonder what's the purpose of the lease, but, yeah, go ahead.
Because you're only, this is over 5 years, you're only having to fork over $20,000 of your capital, of your current operating mm-hmm. budget, but you get the infusion of the technology
right.
in 1 year. That's why.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. I'm thinking in terms of our reserves discussion. Would we? Would it be a cheaper price? You know, now if we bought them outright. If we were funded out of our reserves.
I have seen
the dollar. With the dollar buyout, it would be a cheaper cost. And some, when I bring forward our netbooks, for instance, where we might look at doing the fair market value, our out of pocket is actually less over that period of time for that particular type of lease. Provided at the end of that lease, we decide to give the equipment back to the leasing company, which would be the intention.
Okay. I'm just asking. I'm not suggesting we do it because we haven't had the discussion yet or really decided whether that's an acceptable use of reserves. But I was just, you know, wondering if there's a benefit to doing it. Instead of paying someone else the interest,
right.
Let's pay ourselves since we're not making any anyway.
But doing it on a lease basis is because it's a technology tool and we know that there will be a newer version 5 years down the road?
In some cases it fits in with the refresh cycle. The primary reason was just to be able to free up capital for each budget year. Mm-hmm. So we weren't taxing ourselves too much.
Yeah, I get that. I'm just.
Well, that would be the case though if they had a large residual without USBN. At the end, it's all you're basically leasing it down the aisle.
Right, right, right.
And so there's no additional dollar at the end. So.
But we're not encumbered by having to keep that technology if, in fact, some really great change. Yeah.
I think what you're saying is
after
2 years, if something new came out, can
we then
break the lease and be done?
No.
No.
So then I think that's a good question. Maybe we should just go ahead and purchase it. Take that.
Like you said, it's not a sustainable model, though. If you're using your reserves to buy your technology, eventually your reserves.
So you'd have to budget.
You budget.
So you're saying, like we talked about capital projects.
Yeah.
Like
right. And it's like, you know, we say, hey, but what we're basically saying, but we didn't give interest to somebody. We're saving more than, you know, the interest you would have earned
right.
with the extra money sitting
right.
there given what we paid.
Right now. Right. Yeah.
But, yes, I understand. It makes a lot of sense, especially in a school district where it's going to be used by a number of the stakeholders over a number of years, it's fair to just pay for it over a number of years. But from that approach, this would just be from a budgeting standpoint.
Mm-hmm. You just have to budget a surplus into your budget
right.
to
yeah.
make up for it.
It's not the next year, we've got this much to spend again. Yeah,
almost like, create an account, like we're talking about with Brooks.
Yeah. I don't have more on the pricing, so we're going from 39 to 109. Or 37 to 109 boards in the district with this purchase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 72 boards.
Yeah, just in terms of, you know, more of my time I spent in Hadley, do we talk to each teacher or whoever about where it goes in the room? I mean, that we don't, like, they had a nice wall with a marker board and then we put this in the middle and now they're like, you know, you know, because that's something I got for math teachers. It's like, it's nice to have it, but it's hard to send three kids up to the board at once.
Yeah, I heard that.
You know, that we're not, we're putting it in a room that we're not, are we going to move the other boards? I mean, we're not getting rid of whiteboards for other things. You know what I mean?
We just had this discussion.
we did talk about that. Yes, we did talk about that.
But I'm just because of the sheer numbers we're putting out now, I can sense a lot of people just say, no, they're throwing these things in there, you know, euphemistically. But I hope it's something that we... At least in, you know, what conclusion did you come to?
Mike, do you want to share that?
The smart boards versus the whiteboards? Well,
no, where are we going to put them?
Well, it may vary.
Who decides where they go?
It may depend very, depending on the room. In most cases, all these rooms have projectors.
The projectors are already
focused
on the whiteboard.
Right. So you have a screen that's going to pull down anyway. And since the projector's already there, the cost that we would take on just to have the projectors moved, particularly if we had to have power moved with it, just wouldn't make sense to me.
Right, I understand.
Projectors that are already in place, we're going to utilize where they are. If they had to be moved, it would only be maybe a ceiling tile or two over, so the cost of doing that versus taking the whole thing and moving it with power would be substantially more. Mm-hmm. So we're going to stick with where those are mounted currently. The way the board would mount would be, in a lot of cases, it would be over a whiteboard, but you'd still have either side of the whiteboard
doesn't cover the whole whiteboard.
Oh, I understand it doesn't, but I just know now that so many are going out. Let's not make it, you know, I showed up in the summer and I lost this. At least everyone knows whether it's their room or not.
Mike's been meeting with the Hadley staff in focus groups since November.
Okay.
And the department chairs will be, you know, have been involved in those discussions and would be aware of where those are going.
Right. And
the principals.
Math and science is primarily where we've seen going at Hadley. In the grade schools, we've got our user group that's already meeting there. And before we would identify specific rooms where these boards would go. So it wouldn't be a surprise. And we also have a strategy for how we're going to have it mounted, where it's going to be placed in the room. So we just haven't got quite to the detail yet of identifying which specific rooms they would be. But that would be the next step. And then we would have a strategy for how it would be mounted that would be the most cost effective.
One thing that, and I was thinking about this, I'm just reminded, and maybe this is also a request to, when we're doing presentations, board presentations, and we're not using the technology, so to speak, for the whiteboard or for the smart board, you know, I would prefer to see it on the big projector just because it's, when you shrink it down, it's so hard. I'm just wondering about students, you know, being able to see.
Put the screen down and shoot it
right.
On the next
like
screen.
When we've had presentations, you know, I know it's nice to be able to hit next slide right on there, but for me, as the person farthest away from the screen.
Okay.
Well, unfortunately, that's fixed. You can't move it back.
It's not
No, but the screen.
You could bring down the screen,
right.
But. It's already positioned.
The resolution.
That's on, not on a.
But remember, I think there's very probably fewer times in a classroom setting where they're showing charts with numbers like we're looking at.
Yeah.
It's more interactive, and it's this is a different use of it's the tool. You know, we're using it more like a slideshow, basically. Yeah.
And the screen size is really no smaller than if you had a projector screen.
How old are you, Dan?
Oh, yeah, Dan, come sit here, Dan. I'll sit with you. I have new glasses.
Bifocals yet?
And just anecdotally, I just was at a final college visit with Corinne Muir and Augustana and their new education department, and they walked her through, and every single room you know, has smart board technology, and a couple of the education majors who are now in their clinicals talked about, like one of them talked about a friend of theirs who doesn't have the smart board technology in their education program at their school and how disadvantaged they are. And so it's this whole expectation of what are our current crop of new teachers coming in knowing and what's the expectation to be able to utilize that. So it just kind of hit me in the face today as we were touring the classrooms and seeing every faculty member, you know, teaching from this technology.
One of the benefits that we get from going with COTG over United Visual as well is they offer free training, which we've taken advantage of this whole year, and it's been a real benefit. It takes some stress off of Christina Kellmer, instructional tech. So as we have more users, we're going to certainly have more need for that kind of professional development. Right now, the vendor offers that for free.
What was the, and I didn't hear about it this morning, what was that other technology that was being referred to?
Oh, 204, the representative from District 36, who was saying that in 204 the superintendent had made a comment that they would be using, that the smart boards would be just interactive whiteboards, which essentially is the same thing, but I think, you know, there's technology out there that would eventually interactive walls, I mean, you know.
Oh, but she didn't have a specific.
No.
I thought she had a specific one in mind.
No.
Okay.
I think she was referencing a conversation that she had in a PTA conversation about who should fund what.
Right.
And they were talking about smart boards.
I didn't, you know.
Yeah.
It's always getting out. So I didn't know if she had a specific one.
Yeah, she did. No, I don't think she did.
Okay, anything else?
So that's the end of this evening's Finance and Facilities Committee meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.